The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
This episode of the Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by BetOnline.ag. Check it out. We're in the middle of baseball season. Are you looking for a place to make your online wagers? Then head to betonline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. The Steve Austin Show is also sponsored in part by DDP Yoga. I did my very first DDPY workout with Dallas back in June, and I was really impressed by how much I loved it. I made a commitment to stick with the program for a few months, and I'm still going strong and enjoying the process. I've been doing my regular workouts along with the DDP Yoga Now app, and man, I'm feeling a difference, a big difference. If you really want to see the power of DDPY in action, you have to watch Dallas's new real-life reality series, We Can Rebuild You. Dallas had been working with disabled veteran Jerry Cameron, whose only goal is to be able to walk again without his walker. So far, Jerry has gone from barely being able to get out of a chair to doing some of his DDPY workouts without needing his walker at all. You can follow Jerry's progress at ddpyoga.com/rebuild. Have you been looking to get on board with DDP Yoga? Well, there's no excuse not to, because Dallas is giving you 7 days free to try it out. That is a whole week to try the program, explore the app, get a load of all the content, the motivation, the programs, the recipes, and own your life, and it's completely free. DDP Yoga can work for all ages, weights, and fitness levels. It's a kick-ass cardio workout that will dramatically increase your flexibility and strengthen your core like never before, all with minimal joint impact. Just for listeners of the Steve Austin Show, you can save 20% off all DVDs and annual membership for the DDP Yoga Now app. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to take advantage. Check us out. Dallas has some awesome workshops coming up, including Toronto, Canada on September 22nd. Get all the info at ddpyogaworkshops.com. Or if you just want to meet Dallas, catch him at the Rhode Island Comic Con, November 2nd through 4th. Tickets and information at ricomiccon.com.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from the Silver State out here in Nevada, Broken Skull Ranch 2.0. I'm finally back home right now, well, at least my house in Nevada, with my illustrious wife, Kristen, sitting across from me. Moolah's sitting beside me, and Callie's over there whining in her dog bed. Callie, we're going to go out there and wash all the buggies, wash the four-wheeler. We got plenty of work to do. I'll throw the ball for you. We're going to have a great day. Today is Labor Day, Kristen. We just got finished reading about Labor Day, and I was going to describe what it was about, but, man, it's kind of a lengthy description. All I know, Kristen, bottom line means Labor Day is a day off.
Yep.
Not for everybody, but for most people, it's a day off. So anyway, I guess the laborers back in the day felt like they were working too much, so they needed a day off. That's a long story short, and I'm sticking to that story. It's a beautiful day out here. I'm trying to rustle my wife up to go out there in the Kawasaki Terex and go riding around a little bit, but I think she's going to put me to work, and there's too many things to do around here. My guest on today's podcast is my brother-in-law, Mitch Bailey. We're going to talk about the great outdoors, all the adventures we had on my antelope hunt over there in Unit 022. And we were in Sparks, Nevada for that hunt. And we went out, there's a couple thousand acres out there before we went on a hell of a damn four-wheeler ride. But we was just about 15 miles out of Reno, and you could see all the casinos and stuff like that from the damn mountains that we were hunting in. And that's when we loaded up and went on the hell of a damn four-wheeler ride. There was some rugged stuff out there and just had an absolute blast. So ended up being successful. I don't ever really post any pictures of some of my hunting adventures on social media, because most people are kind of shocked when they see stuff like that on social media. So anyway, I had a great time. I took an outstanding antelope and got him made up into a couple of back straps, and getting him processed right now. I'm going to eat every single bit of him and enjoy my hunt very much. It was my first antelope hunt, and I got a mule deer coming up in November, which I'm really looking forward to. I was successful on last year's endeavor, but it just me and my brother-in-law talking about the headaches, hassles, and horse shit of getting out there and dealing with people and having a good time, you know, in the field and hunting responsibly. Crystal, what we got planned for today? We're going to make hot dogs tonight for Labor Day. I came home from my brother-in-law's house. I've been up there for a couple of days, and I told my wife I'd take her out for breakfast. So I took her ass out for breakfast. She's happy as a clam now. We're going to do hot dogs, and you said what?
I'm having a veggie dog.
You're going to have a veggie dog?
Potato salad.
I got a can of Hormel chili. Corn on the cob. We're going to put that on the grill. And I always like Hormel chili when we're making hot dogs. And my wife makes good chili, like good Frito pie chili or regular eating chili. When you're eating hot dogs, that damn stuff from Hormel or Gebhardt or whatever it is, that's the best chili you can get on a hot dog, in my opinion. So that's what yours truly will be eating tonight for dinner in lieu of Labor Day. And today, I had to take a night off the margaritas last night, Kristen. I had been mixing margaritas over at my brother-in-law's house, and he didn't have a shot glass. He didn't have a mixing cup. He didn't have shit. He didn't have a lime squasher. He didn't have nothing. So Crystal went to the store and got him all set up, and I made margaritas for a couple of days in a row. But last night, we were sipping on a Gentleman Jack and Zero Coke, Crystal. I just, the mixologist in me was tired of mixing. So Crystal and I just loaded up on groceries, and I am going to make my last batch of Broken Skull Ranch margaritas tonight. Drink about two or three of them, and then I will shut down drinking season because my hunt is now over. And for some reason, Crystal, when hunting season comes on, the diet completely changes. It's more whiskey, more margaritas. I ate Fig Newton bars. I mean, he had the biggest damn bag of Doritos chips that you've ever seen. Nacho cheese flavor. And they were awesome. And then my wife sent me with a big ass thing of potato chips. But there was something about those Doritos with that nacho cheese. There must be a frog's hair crack cocaine in those sumbitches, because once you start eating them, you cannot stop. So I was eating those. We was eating Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies. Oh, we had eggs in a, the eggs are in the story of the podcast. I got in a little heat over there for reaching my hand down there in a damn jar. There's protocol when you got three guys sharing a bunch of boiled eggs in a pickle jar. You're not supposed to put your hands in there. You'll hear about that on the podcast. And then what else did I have?
I made sandwiches.
Oh yeah, sandwiches, ham and cheese sandwiches. That was on the list. And last night I cooked up a couple of ribeyes for us. So now it's going to be back to a glass of wine each night. Get back on the diet. And you know what, Kristen? Since I've been getting ready for this antelope hunt, last time I was down here, I was working out like a bastard, doing my cardio training. And then, boy, all of a sudden went to hell with all of the projects that we had. And so I'm toning it back. Well, it's our vacation. So now I'm trying to, but my point is, I haven't trained in, what, 10 days, 12 days?
I'm not sure.
It's the longest I've gone without training in a long-ass time. You know what? I'm holding up pretty good, too, for doing all the bullshit that I've done. Probably a little bit weaker on the weights, but I'll find out tonight, because I'm going to go in there and kick up a workout before I start on the Broken Skull Ranch margaritas. And I keep teasing that I'm going to let that damn recipe out. I am, in just a few days. I'm going to do a couple of damn modifications to it tonight, Kristen, because I'm messing with the ones without triple sec, without Grand Marnier. I'm just shifting the ingredients around a little bit. And my wife knows that I'm an absolute perfectionist, not on everything, but on margaritas. So I ain't going to release this damn formula until I get it right, and that's the bottom line. What else we got planned?
I'm going to go horseback riding.
Oh, when do you get your horseback riding lesson? Tomorrow? Are you excited about it?
Yes, I am.
When are you going to come four-wheeler riding with me, man? I've been trying to get you out there. I told you I got a great place, and if you go out there, I think you'd probably get hooked on it. And that would give me an excuse to go get us another four-wheeler.
All right.
And then we just get a toy hauler and haul our shit around and camp a little bit and ride around and hang out with the dogs.
Where are we going to put the dogs in the four-wheelers?
Well, we'll take the mule. We'll just put them in the back seat and take the mule. Are you down with that?
Yeah.
If you've ever been to the state of Nevada, man, there's so much stuff to do here, man. People out here are very outdoorsy. And Chris and I have been looking forward to trying to sell our RV that we were driving back and forth to Texas. It's kind of like a dog hauler, and that son of a bitch is barely longer than a Suburban. And that thing has run its course. So if we can sell that, want to get us a toy hauler, probably about a 25-footer. I'm still doing my research. If any of you guys got toy haulers out there, I'm thinking about a bumper pull or a fifth wheel. So if you have any feedback on that, please send it to questions@steveaustinshow.com. Way back in the day, I had a fifth wheel trailer and I enjoyed it, but I'm just trying to consider whether I want to use the back of my truck to haul a dirt bike or something and not have that fifth wheel back there, or just put the toys in the back of the toy hauler and go from there. So I would value your opinion if you have one on the subject at hand. Other than that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up and open to this podcast. It's me and my brother Mitch talking about my antelope hunt, and not just about, we ain't even talking about killing. We're basically just talking about animals and wildlife and getting outdoors and having an absolute blast. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. I had been looking forward to this hunt for a long time. When we first got out there, I didn't think we was going to have any success at all. And then we just lucked into a hell of a situation. My podcast today with my brother-in-law, Mitch Bailey, from Nevada Hunting Services in Nevada. If you hunt elk, mule deer, antelope, bighorn sheep, bear, mountain lion, you name it, this guy is the best guide in the state. And that is my opinion. And I know what I'm talking about. Anyway, before we get to Mitch, listen up. The sports betting scene is currently hotter than it's ever been. And the best part is that our friends at BetOnline have partnered with us here at Podcast One Sportsnet to get you in on the action. You heard directly from Dave Mason at BetOnline right here on this show. These are our go-to guys who we trust for all things betting. Lines, odds, wagers, inside info, you name it. And with college football season in full swing, I think it's high time we got in on the action. Hit me up on Twitter with who you're picking in this week's game. Here's a few I'm looking forward to. Number 7, Oklahoma versus UCLA. Number 2, Clemson versus Texas A&M. My nephew and niece, both students at Texas A&M, diehard Aggies fans. And number 15, USC at number 13, Stanford. Use the hashtag StoneColdBet, and we'll pick one of you folks as the winner of a $50 credit for betonline.ag live here on the podcast next week. But first, you got to sign up. Head over to betonline.ag and use promo code podcast1, that's PODCAST and the number 1, to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. One more time, betonline.ag and use promo code podcast1 to start winning with your online sportsbook experts.
If you like this show, you need to check out CarCast, the longest-running automotive podcast. CarCast is a twice-weekly automotive show hosted by Adam Carolla, wrestling superstar Bill Goldberg, and Matt the Motorator D'Andrea. It's the only show of its kind that explores all aspects of the automotive space, from the performance aftermarket to new car buying and the future of the automotive industry. The guys answer your questions, offer advice, and feature guests from the automotive industry and celebrity car enthusiasts. Listen to CarCast with Goldberg and Motorator Matt D'Andrea every Wednesday and Adam Carolla with the Motorator every Friday on the Podcast One mobile app or iTunes Podcasts.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
All right, I'm sitting here in Spanish Springs, Nevada. My brother-in-law Mitch from Nevada Hunting Service. We just got finished doing 3 days of antelope hunting. We're sitting on this couch. I got my legs kicked up in front of me. I got a pillow on my lap for my laptop computer, my iPhone, all my technology. I got my Zoom H6 recorder going. Mitch Bailey sitting beside me. Mitch, how are you?
Doing darn good, Steve. Just had a great hunt with you.
You took a little cat nap earlier. You back up to full speed?
I think I'm about 95% ready to go.
Well, I got some Gentleman Jack and a little bit of Diet Coke going. Makes for a great cocktail. I had to just go stiffen that thing up a little bit to get a little bit of groove going. I tried to start the podcast a couple times and shit to bed. So taking another run at it with a little more energy. We're watching LSU, ranked number 25, beating the dog shit out of Miami, who's what, ranked number 6. They just took the damn gimmick off the screen. LSU's opened up a can of whoop-ass on Miami. So nonetheless, that's what's going on here. I'm drinking some Gentleman Jack and Zero Coke. And me and Mitch just got finished doing some antelope hunting. And God dang, man, his buddy Casey came and joined us out there. We went to a couple different locations. But it all started off a while back when Mitch got me a landowner tag. And I've been putting in the draw for a tag for the last 4 years. I haven't drawn anything, and due to Mitch's connections out here, the fact that he's been guiding in the state of Nevada for over 30 years, he knows a lot of people. So we got a couple of landowner permits. Had to buy them. support the wildlife. The landowners make a little bit of money off of them. And God dang, we had a damn good time. But it all started once I knew this hunt was happening. I was down there at the Broken Skull Ranch 2.0, sighting in my gun, getting everything dialed in. If I'm going to go out there, I want to make sure that I am ready in every aspect and all my gear is ready and top-notch. And, of course, I went out there, got everything dialed in, and promptly left my rifle laying on a damn table. And I'd call Mitch because I went back down there. When I left that gun out there, I called Mitch. I said, dude. And he wouldn't take my phone call. He was at the bar drinking Jack Daniels, trying to do whatever he's doing, hang out with his buddy. And he says, I'm drinking. He said, what's wrong? I texted him back. I lost my gun. As soon as I texted him that back, he calls me. What did you do? What did you think when I said I lost my gun?
Well, first of all, I couldn't believe you lost your gun. And then you had to go accusing everybody of stealing your gun. You saw the guys that drove off with your gun. Everybody took your gun. I told you to go to the police station, ask them if they had your gun. I wasn't just down there by myself. I was down there with Casey and a client. We just finished up on an antelope hunt, and I told them both. I go, oh, God dang, my brother-in-law just left his gun at the rifle range. Who leaves their gun at the rifle range? Nobody in their right mind goes, shoots their gun, leaves their gun, gets in their car, and drives away without their gun. I've never heard of it in my lifetime, and I hope I never hear it again.
Dude, but I never heard it myself.
Unbelievable.
I tell my wife, Chris, to be like driving my car to the car wash, washing my car, and walking home.
Oh, it's my favorite gun, you said. I've had that gun forever. It's my baby, my gun. And you know what? And bless Nevada's heart. Sure enough, what happened when you went looking for your gun?
Dude, you told me that. You said, dude, you're in Nevada. Somebody's going to turn your gun in. And I said, man, with my luck, ain't nobody going to turn that thing in. And you go, nope. I'm sure they got video surveillance there. They can back up the cameras. Because there's no range master over there where I'm shooting. It's just a shooting range. And there's a couple of guys out there shooting. But you said, man, this is Nevada. Someone will turn your gun in. So I did the due diligence thing and headed straight to the sheriff's department. Y'all heard me tell the story on the podcast before. I won't go into all the details. Finally, I called in there to dispatch because the whole place was locked up. They was in a big-ass meeting over there. I called that damn guy and I said, hey, dude, I'm trying to report a lost gun. What kind of gun is it? It's a 7 Mag Model 700 painted in a camouflage pattern. He goes, you are one lucky man tonight. Someone found your gun and brought it in here and turned it in, and the officer's going to be back in about 45 minutes. I waited over in the parking lot, got my gun back, chit-chatted with the guys about the gang unit and all. Dude, I got the whole crime scene in Northern Nevada. Got all the 411 on that.
No, no doubt.
Yeah, dude, if you want to join a gang, I got the 411 for you. I don't figure the gang type, but nonetheless, it was good talking with the cops down there. And anyway, I was back out at the shooting range. We just got back to Nevada to the BSR 2.0, and I told my wife, said, I got to go back out there at the shooting range. I want to make sure I am dialed in for a long-range shot because I've never hunted antelope, but I've heard that they're very leery, they're very keen, their eyesight is unbelievable. They don't stand around and be still a whole lot, so it's going to be a very challenging hunt. You're dealing with windy conditions, long-distance shooting, so I got to be dialed in. So I went down there, set up my target at 300 yards, and a dude comes over to me, and he goes, hey, man, I got another little 8-inch gong target out there on a chain if you want to hit it as well. And I was shooting at 300 yards, and those guys were shooting in a prone position. Two police officers. All the cops I met over here in Nevada are cool as shit, including the one that gave me a warning when I was speeding the other day going to the Broken Skull Ranch 2.0.
Yeah, that's not right. You should have got a ticket.
Dude, I was in a passing lane, and all of a sudden, man, I hit an 85, and I was running radar, and that dude was on the side of the road facing me, and he busted me bigger than Dallas. And I was able to, my wife was pissed when I got off that ticket.
Rightfully so. You deserved the ticket. You should have got the ticket. Anybody else would have got the ticket. And we're kind of tired of you being treated like you're some sort of celebrity.
Anyway, so I'm over here shooting that dude. I'm over hitting that guy's target. Like, I'm just ringing it like a bell. And he's over laying in a prone position. I go over and said, dude, what are you shooting? And he goes, man, this is my 308. He goes, you want to shoot it? I said, really? He goes, yeah. Man, he loaded me up 9 bullets in his clip. I laid down in a prone position. I started just zapping that damn gong with that damn 308. It was amazing. So anyway, I got back over on my 7 mag, got everything dialed in. And this time, Mitch, I did not forget my 7 mag. I didn't leave it on the table. Even though the gun barrel was hot, I put it in the back of my truck, got all my shit, and then I loaded all my stuff up, and me and Kristen came over here in separate vehicles.
It's amazing that it happened that way, but more importantly, I want to go back a little bit there. Don't you remember when you lost it, you didn't forget it, and somebody picked it up, and you were all accusatory? I'm kind of curious, how do you feel about yourself now?
Well, I figured there's no way that I could forget my rifle laying on a table at a shooting range. How that happened, dude, I told the two cops that I was hanging out with and shooting a breeze with. It was embarrassing. I am a responsible, proud gun owner and an OCD when it comes to safety and guns. So for me to drive off with my shit on the damn table and then someone turned it in to the sheriff's department, I'm lucky, I'm thankful, and I'm glad that, you know, no one was hurt with my gun.
Well,
that's my responsibility that I take very seriously.
You got a lot to be lucky and thankful for. You're lucky you got your gun back, you're lucky you didn't get a ticket, and you're lucky that you get to go hunting and have a good time.
When I came out here, dude, I was ready. And so I got over here about 2:30. Mitch had to work about a half day. He finally comes on in, and he goes, "Man, were you ready to go out?" And I said, "Yep, let's go get them." So, man, we just rode around about a half day. We put in about 30, 40, 50 miles that day.
Yeah.
And we saw a couple of good antelopes, and I was like, "God dang, man, these things are pretty damn leery." I was asking my brother, Scott. He had went on an antelope hunt. And Ted, my buddy, Ted Fowler 361 down at the Broken Skull Ranch in Rockport, he's been on a couple of antelope hunts. And he said, "Man, that's a fun hunt." And I didn't really know what they meant by fun. So how would you describe the fun aspect of hunting the antelope? Mitch, you've been guiding for 30 years. You're one of the best guides in the state of Nevada. If not the best, you won't never say that. But I'm saying it. So what is so challenging and fun and the allure of chasing the antelope?
Well, let's just start off with, they're probably, in my opinion, and a lot of my friends that have hunted them their whole lives, the best eating of all the big game animals. Absolutely delicious meat, good protein. You know, it's a table fare that you can really enjoy, which makes it even more fun to hunt them, because you know at the end of the day when you do get one, you're fortunate to have one fill your freezer and feed your family for you know, oh, I don't know, however many months you can get out of one. They're not that big of an animal, but, you know, they're challenging with their eyesight so much better than ours. Their speed is something that you can't tackle that speed with anything. You've got to fool them. You've got to get in front of them. You've got to hide from them. You've got to figure them out how to get in a place where they're going to show up. But if you get out there on foot, you're likely not going to chase one down at all. They set off to get away from you, and it can be miles and miles before they stop running. So it's a challenging hunt. It's not like a mule deer that stands there and you know, his best defense is that he can smell you or hide from you. Antelope just flat out run away from you. So that's kind of the allure.
Yeah, but what's the deal with the eyesight of the antelope? Because I think you were telling me they got like 8 power eyes.
Yep, they do. 8 power, so 1 power is 20/20 vision for a human being is normal vision. Antelope's 160/20, so at 160 feet, they're looking at you like you're looking at them at 20 feet. So great vision. You know, at a mile, they're looking at you pretty much like you're right in front of them. They can see your movements, pick out what you're doing. They'll be staring at you. You go to make a sneak on one, and you'd be surprised, like you noticed yesterday when we made that stalk. You know, we're better than a half mile away, and those does pinpoint you, and they're staring at you the whole time. And they're watching every movement you make. So closer you try to get, the sooner they're going to get up and sooner they're going to keep that distance. You know, you noticed yesterday we closed it to 500 yards. They increased it to 500 yards. You try to get closer, they got further. And it's kind of a game of cat and mouse.
It seemed like every time we was looking at them, they was looking at us.
For sure. For sure. It's very, very hard to sneak up on an animal, especially that open country like that. I mean, yesterday, how many trees did we see out there? couple.
Ain't enough trees.
No.
We were trying to sneak up to some rock outcroppings just to get a rest. There was a couple places I could have got a prone shot or used something. You had some shooting sticks that I was going to use. But I was like, man, the wind's blowing like a son of a bitch. Today was optimal. It got a little hot, but there wasn't no wind to be blowing. Ended up taking a close range shot, which we'll get to in a little bit. But man, the thing about those things were you had your buddy in the back seat of the buggy. And he said, hey, man, Casey's going to join us. He was there on my mule deer hunt as well. And an extra set of eyes, and Casey can really spot those things. Dude, we was cruising around, and first evening it was just you and me. We saw a couple of them. We was watching them, and I was like, man, this is going to be real interesting. And all of a sudden we're riding around. Casey says, hey, man, Mitch, pull over. Dude, 1,500, I'm swearing, dude, a mile away, a mile and a half away, Casey's spotting these damn antelopes. There's 6, 8, sometimes 10 or 12, 3, whatever, these different groups. Most time I got a buck with them. One buck, not a couple. That's just what, harem?
Harem, yeah.
Dude, he spots them things with the naked eye, and all of a sudden we start glassing them. I'm glassing the whole damn hillside or mountainside, whatever it is. I ain't found them yet. And Casey saw the son of bitches with his bare eye. Then he sets up his spotting scope. I'm over there with my binoculars. I don't know where the shit are winding my watch because those son of bitches blend in. Dude, I ain't used to that shit.
No. And, a couple things that are pretty funny when you're trying to guide the other guy into looking at them. You know, it's right below that ridge. It's right below that knuckle on that ridge. Look down at that dark rock just to the right, you know, and the whole thing, you still see your buddy waving his binoculars around, in your case, my brother-in-law, waving his binoculars around trying to figure out exactly what we're talking about. So then you get out that high-dollar spotting scope and you put that animal dead center in that spotting scope. Say, okay, look in the spotting scope. Now do you see him? And to my surprise, I don't see him.
No, I don't see shit.
And they're still not in there.
But you and Casey got a good chemistry together.
We do.
Sure. How long y'all been hunting together?
Gosh, we've been hunting together probably 15 years. Pretty much every hunt I go on, he's there. And vice versa. We share experiences that way. And we have a great chemistry. If I see something and he doesn't have it yet, all I got to do is say a couple words and he's got it. He looks down my line of sight. I say something, he sees it, and he's got it. He does it a lot better with me than I do it with him because his eyes are incredible. And he'll see something out there. I'm like, man, I just can't see it. Kind of similar to you and I, how we were having a little struggle there. But, you know, over the years, you figure each other out and you get it dialed in, and sure helps. Sure helped that extra set of eyes and extra set of great eyes, what we had with him.
Hey, man, tell me the story about the antelope, because they're native here, but I was reading through all the hunting stuff many, many years ago. They got to as low as 20,000. Then all the conservation efforts, they're back over probably around 700,000. So there's plenty of them. Dude, tell me a little bit about the antelope.
We have a great
hollow hair and all that.
As far as what did you say?
The hollow hair and all that.
Oh, they're hollow hair. Well, you know, I even learned this in college in a class I took about, we brought in some hair samples from big game animals. And antelope hair, when you grab a piece of antelope hair and you float it in a bucket or a jar of water, it actually floats because it's straw-like and it floats because it's hollow. Whereas deer hair or any other hair will sink. So they have the hollow hair. It's an insulating factor and it also keeps them cool in the summertime. That allows them to lay out in the middle of nothing on a 100-degree day right in a prairie and stay pretty cool and hydrated. And they still need water and all that, just like any big game animal. They do really well, and they've adapted to the heat. As far as the population of antelope in our state, we've got a lot of antelope, increasing numbers, and increasing numbers statewide. You know, when I was a kid, we had a lot of antelope in the western part of the state, but they've moved and grown in numbers clear across the whole region. So you can get good antelope numbers all the way across Nevada from east to west and even down south. Very few areas in the state don't have an antelope hunt anymore, but most all of them have a good, sustainable hunt.
Dude, how important is it to take however many numbers that the Nevada Department of Wildlife, NDAL, says, hey, man, this is how many we need to take here in the state of Nevada? How do they determine that?
It's basically, the department manages wildlife based on buck-to-doe ratios. You don't want to have too many does. You got to have a balance. How many bucks do you need to successfully breed the number of does that you have to maintain a scientific data-based population of antelope? And they do that with all species. Flying, they'll do it with flying and counting numbers. They'll do it with harvest data. The department in Nevada is very, very methodical in how they strategize hunting. They have questionnaires that you're mandated to fill out every year with how many animals you might have wounded, how many harvested, how many days you hunted, how many animals you saw during the hunt. And they use all this data. They put it all together, and they come out with a quota. So they know how many males they would like harvested out of an area to keep the balance. They know not everybody that goes out is going to be successful. So they figure the harvest percentage of successful hunters, and that way they can figure, okay, it's going to take, say, 80 hunters to get the number of 40, what we really need harvested. And they do that off percentages. Good data. They do that with all species, and Nevada is one of the best managed wildlife agencies in the country.
It always kind of chaps my ass out. So someone says, oh, you're not out there hunting Bambi, are you? No, I'm out there hunting either a mule deer or a white-tailed deer or an antelope, dude. The antelope that we ended up taking today on day three, I've gotten two front shoulders. I got the hindquarters. I got both back straps. I'm eating the entire antelope. So I'm eating the damn thing. So to all the anti-hunters out there, it is what it is. I enjoy my hunting, and I enjoy it very much. What would happen, Mitch, if they didn't say, hey, man, we need to take out X amount of antelopes? Would they end up overbreeding or overpopulating, become a nuisance, die because there's not enough to eat? What would happen to them?
I don't know what would happen to them in the long run, but habitat in this state especially, you see how dry it is and the climate, and, you know, we have the least amount of precipitation, annual precipitation, any state in the country. So, you know, the habitat we have can only support so many animals. Some areas can support a lot more. Some should support a lot less. These animals are in competition with wild horses, grazing from cattle, competition from other big game animals, and then you got the predator factor in it too. If we don't manage predators and big game, and you leave it to themselves to manage, there's likely going to be nothing left. Predators will do really well, and once they wipe out a species, they'll move on to another. So with predator management, which we have, and big game management, it allows, you know, the department to establish quotas, like I was talking about, and have a healthy population. For people that don't believe that works, just look at history and see how close to extinction some of these big game species were. Nevada has more bighorn sheep, you know, as being reintroduced in man-made guzzlers and water projects than likely any state in the country except Alaska. And that's all man efforts that did that. So it's critical. It's absolutely critical. And you know, for those people who want to go out and look at the animals and don't want to hunt them, they can thank the hunters and the conservation groups for putting it together for them.
What was your basic strategy when you take a client out as far as hunting antelope? Because I know, like today, we were riding around. Yesterday, we were riding around, and it's a spot and stalk. Is that always the method of operation, or is there any other way to hunt the antelope that you like?
You know, spot and stalk. You can drive. You can hike. You can hike aimlessly, hoping to find something. But as you've seen with these antelope, we're covering a lot of ground. I mean, we're into that thing 30 miles deep yesterday. If you're going to do that on foot, what are you going to cover in this kind of country, a mile or two? You get out in your vehicle, you do some hiking like we did yesterday in that heat and everything else. You glass different angles, and when you find an animal, you're typically got a mile or so to close the gap and get in position if you're fortunate enough to figure a way to get that close. So that's kind of our spot and stalk on the antelope. It's very similar with all of them, deer, elk, sheep. It's all pretty much the same. You know, you go on foot or you use a machine to do your scouting, spotting, big optics. And once you've located an animal, then the work really starts trying to figure out how to make it happen. You can have a heck of a long hike trying to get in close with a big deer or sheep, especially.
Dude, we saw a really good buck yesterday, and we started walking up on them. And as we started walking up on them, they started walking away. And then we tried, okay, we're going to, how would you describe what we did as far as getting our position?
Well, what we did was we tried to keep ourselves concealed by using the geography that we had, which was nothing but some rolling hills, cheat grass, and some rock piles. And you and I aren't exactly small guys. Casey isn't either, but you're trying to basically hide an elephant from somebody that's got some great eyesight, and you're trying to hide behind rocks that are a little bit bigger than a shoebox. So, you know, you use the hillside to conceal yourself. And, you know, just like yesterday, we ran out of ways to get any closer, and so we finally just exposed ourselves and hoofed it across that little valley a little quick and got to the rock pile, and sure enough, they saw us and increased the distance. So we had them at probably 700-800 yards. We closed it to what we thought was 5, and they moved up the hill to put it right back to where they felt comfortable. They weren't afraid of us. They were just keeping the distance. And they kept it that way for quite a while until they finally lit out of there and we saw them do about 5 miles at 40 miles an hour.
God
dang, pretty tough.
Man. Watching those things run across the damn, I don't know, mountain plain, just across the way is unbelievable.
Man, you know what, Steve? As you saw today, their legs are about as big around as a broom handle down by their hoof. They have a wide hoof, but that leg bone is tiny. And you remember how fun it was walking across that spongy dirt with boulders in it, twisting our ankles, you know, stumbling around in there and then stumbling back to have lunch. And watching them run 40 miles an hour across that with all four legs flying, not even missing a beat, pretty incredible stuff.
It is. It's fun to watch those things.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and give big ups to True Car. These days, news travels lightning fast, which is great if you're a sports fan. Between status updates and breaking news notifications, you can always be up to the minute on every team and every game. And while this is great for sports, it's the opposite when it comes to buying a car. Go online and you are bombarded with numbers like invoice, list price, dealer price. It's hard to know how to recognize a good price. Not anymore. Introducing True Price from True Car. It's the only price you need to know because it's exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories. How do you know if your True Price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want, so they know how to recognize a good price, and your certified dealers know this, so they set their True Price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. You're also going to need some car insurance for that car. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hell yeah, football is back, and no one covers football like your friends here on Podcast One Sportsnet. We got you covered on a daily basis with the Dan Patrick Show and the Rich Eisen Show. You got that competitive spirit in you? Get the latest tips and news with RJ Bell's Dream Preview and Ross Tucker's Fantasy Feast Podcast. We also have legendary coach Jim Harbaugh on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast, and Revenge of the Jocks with Super Bowl champion Martellus Bennett. Check out all these shows and more each week on Podcast One Sports.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Before we get to the rest of my conversation with Mitch Bailey, listen up. Fighting crime all day with Callie and Moolah can be exhausting, so when it's time to play, these gals deserve the most rough and ready toys around to endure all that energy. That's why we depend on Super Chewer Bark Box. Super Chewer is a monthly delivery of tough toys and more for your dog so that playtime lasts longer and brings the fun right to your door. You won't end? Just let us know your dog's size. Then choose a plan. 1 month, 6 month, and 12 month plans available. And shipping is always free. Plans start at $39 per month. Your first month, the Super Chewer ships right away. Subsequent boxes ship out on the 15th of each month. If your dog chews through everything in their box right away, just let BarkBox know and they'll send you another toy at no cost to keep them busy until the next box arrives. Each month's box comes with two tough, durable toys designed and tested by our industrial designers, two meaty chews, and two full bags of all-natural treats. And for an extra $9 per month, get your dog one extra toy each month. For a limited time, get 50% off your first month of Super Chewer on a 6- or 12-month plan. Head over to superchewer.com/Steve and promo code Steve at checkout. Again, that's superchewer.com/Steve and promo code Steve at checkout for 50% off your first month of Super Chewer. Do it for your dog.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
What's some of the craziest shit you've seen on like an antelope hunt or any of your hunts? Because you're hunting all the you're hunting elk, mule deer, antelope, bear, mountain lion. What to leave out? Bighorn sheep. What's some of the craziest shit you've seen out there? Because hey, let me ask you this specifically about the antelope hunt. We're on a particular bluff or just this area that we were in. Casey was spotting. Y'all saw a couple of bucks, a big buck and a younger buck fighting. I couldn't spot them with my bare eyes. I finally, after 15 minutes, found them in my binoculars. And then we watched them. And then all of a sudden, a buggy came behind us and they passed us. You knew them. They moved out. We moved out of the way. There was two other buggies out there, and there was about those two bucks that were fighting over a doe, and these things are vicious.
Man, are they ever.
Dude, I never figured that an antelope was vicious.
Man. So, you know what, that like we were talking about earlier, I'm always surprised, and I always learn something new. So we'd gone through that valley first thing in the morning with three different people in ATVs behind us. We left that area because there was plenty of people in there hunting, which, you know, that's normal. You're going to come across other hunters, three-day weekend, et cetera. We went and did our thing, and coming back, we rolled right through that same valley. We were going to look out over another side, and darn, there's somebody over there. So we backed up, started glassing, and we saw the two hunters pressure some antelope. They blew out of there, and it was a doe and a small buck running across there. Then that buck was... He was trying to herd that doe up, round her up. He wasn't running away. He was herding her. And in that same valley with all that traffic, out from a tree comes a mature buck, beats the tar out of that little buck, steals the doe, and then takes her right back in the trees to hide, where we saw him and her standing there just like statues, where at least three or four other buggies rolled right through there, right underneath him at a couple hundred yards, never even knew they were there. So that buck's able to keep his breeding ritual going. He's actually able to fight a buck and steal a doe right under the nose of four or five other hunters. We were just fortunate enough to see it from a distance because Casey managed to catch him up there on that side hill.
My deal is, because I've always hunted private land because I've been in South Texas, man, with BLM, man, all those buggies out there. And then a couple, I think, finally saw one or at least maybe the other buck, but they parked, you know, and they're pointing head on right into the action that we were watching from probably 400 yards away from them, probably, shit, 1,200 miles away from the bucks. Dude, what is protocol? You guide this area. You've been doing this your whole life. So what is up? Because we were going down. I'll keep segueing in the story here. We were going down to our initial pass, and we're going way in the back, and we passed by three buggies, and they were glassing. So we busted through them. We didn't bust through them. We eased through them. We waved at them, and we went about our way. And you explained to me, like, Steve, we just can't sit here and wait all day. We've got to go because we're hunting way down here. So,
right. Dude,
what is proper protocol as, you know, an awesome guide in the state of Nevada? what's up, because I'm trying to learn, etiquette, protocol, and respect.
I think it boils down to this. If you're on a road and you're hunting, expect to get passed. You know, if you're on a little trail and you're stopped and you're glassing something and it's a rough trail or an ATV road or something that leads off into nowhere and it's obvious you're looking at big game, the best thing you can do is just not bother the person that's in there doing their thing. But, you know, anybody that's on a road glassing and that can expect somebody to go by them, because that road leads somewhere. Just like yesterday, we weren't trying to get in front of those folks. We were trying to get somewhere 20 miles away. So we can't just sit there and wait for them. And we don't want to sit there anyway. We want to get on with our thing and get away from, get some distance between us and hunt a different area. That's just kind of the untold, you know, I guess, rules of the game. But not everybody follows them. And sometimes there's altercations. I'll avoid an altercation at any time because I'm out there to have a good time, not getting an argument. So I typically be the guy to move off.
What's the worst altercation you've had out there?
Oh,
in all your years, or just some of them, random?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have too many of them. I mean, I can't really think of any with me because I get out of the way. I'll let somebody go up the road. But it also works in your favor. I'll give you an example of one. So, gosh, I guess this is probably a little over 20 years ago. I had a guy that had recently had some heart surgery. He didn't get around so well. And like these big game tags, like we talked about, they're so special to draw. And he finally drew one, but he drew it 8 months after he'd had heart surgery. He couldn't get around very well. And we went out to Ely, Nevada on a big bull elk hunt. And we had spied some bulls and made our way up after him. And he just couldn't make it. It was too late in the afternoon to get up there. And so I thought, you know, we'll go in the morning. We'll go really early. Hopefully they'll be down a little lower. And we'll have time to sneak in there and take our time getting him in a position to where we can hopefully harvest one of these big bulls. And got in there in the dark, started up the road, and another outfitter came up behind me. And I asked him, I go, hey, you know, would you mind not pushing this? Because I've got a client here that really needs some time to get up there. And he goes, well, I have a guy that wants him too. I said, that's fine. Go ahead and go. And I turned around and drove back. And as we were leaving, I stopped and looked over a rock pile, and I saw a smaller elk down in the low country that we might be able to go harvest. And my client agreed, okay, let's go try the low country. It'll be easier on me anyway. So we drove right down in there. We got out of the truck, looked in the drainage, and he killed the biggest bull elk to date that I've ever guided anybody to. So sometimes it works in your favor to just not deal with the hassle.
Hey, man, I've been doing a lot of riding on my buggies, on my mules and my Terex and my four-wheeler out there not too far from my ranch. And my nephew came down, and we blew out one of the sidewalls of my Terex, and I didn't have my plug kit. I could have swore when you and me went to Home Depot and bought all them damn tools, I could have swore we bought some plug kits. Remember that shit we left on the counter and I had to go back the next day and get?
Yeah, we went to Home Depot and bought all kinds of things and left half of them at Home Depot. Unbelievable.
Well, dude, that's kind of an ongoing theme. I leave my rifle at the shooting range and I leave all my shit at Home Depot that I already purchased. It'd be like going to Sonic and lady handing me my burger and me just giving it back to her and driving off. Dude, I blew two holes in my sidewall. I could have plugged them if I had a little air compressor. Normally, I slam all my tires in Texas. We were out there today in the middle of nowhere. I was surprised we saw a couple of cats out there on four-wheelers.
Yeah.
Way out there in that country we was at today. We saw a bunch of people yesterday, but today I was surprised we saw even anybody. So when you go back there and you were making this conversation with Casey, you said, hey, man, you want to bring one of the buggies back here? Me and Steve are going to be riding quads.
Yep.
And I just don't want to go back here in one unit because if something happens, we're going to be screwed.
That's right.
So in your rig, I mean, what are you carrying with you? Because I know that I've got to rig up my Terex. I've got to rig up everything because I ain't going to get caught with my pants down again.
No.
Especially when you're out there in the middle of nowhere, when your chances of seeing somebody are nil to none.
Man, you need a plug kit with lots of plugs. If you notice that rig Casey was riding in, both rear tires probably had 10 plugs in each one. There's just no way about it, around it in the country we're in. So, plug kit, air compressor, a rope. something you can tow somebody out with, yourself, a winch, possibly a belt, but and some tools so you can at least do something. It's great if you have a spare belt, but if you don't have some tools to just take the cover off to change it, doesn't do you any good. I try to keep a little bit of everything in each one. Sometimes I forget, you know, sometimes something happens, you get it all out and you forget to put it back in its place. But today I knew how far we were going in, and we didn't make it all the way in because we were fortunate. But the plan was to go in there about 30 miles of rough. That's an awful long walk, and I don't think I'm up for that walk, you know, after riding all day. And nor was I ready to spend the night out in that stuff either. So I figured, you're pretty darn handy on an ATV. I ride the ATV. Casey can follow along in the Ranger. We got the ice chest. We got everything to take care of the antelope. We got lunch. So even if, at least if two of us got a flat tire, the third guy can go back and get a new tire or something. So yeah, I didn't want to do any extra walking today like that, especially as hot as it was.
Man, I hit my odometer, my trip meter, about 3 miles into the ride, and I clocked us in at about 25 round trip. Mm-hmm. So we're probably close to 30. Yeah. And like I said, we happened upon an antelope, which we'll get up to here in a minute. We still had another, 15 miles to go?
Yeah, we did.
So we's going to be back here in the middle of nowhere. And so anyway, we ended up riding, and Mitch said, dude, this is nothing but black rock, and it's a rough ride, but it was rougher than you remembered it being because things have changed. And, man, I'm riding along, and Mitch is leading the way, and, man, I will never, ever not bring my goggles again because that stuff was so powdery, and you're like, oh, man, there's no more dust after. We're about to get in the rocks. Yeah, well, if we go through the rocks, we go through some more powder, and I'm eating all that shit in my eyeballs. And I was going to bring my helmet, but we're just hunting. We're not riding at top speed, so I just figured, you know, I'll just wear my sunglasses and my baseball cap. I ain't never following your ass without bringing my goggles again. End of story.
Oh, God, it's great to look back at you, and you can pull up to me, and you're wiping all that grime out of your eyeballs. It's coming out your nose, on your lips. You don't even look like you anymore. All of a sudden, your beard gets darker.
Dude, I'll tell you what. You told me it was going to be a tough ride, and there's a couple of pretty hairy, pretty technical spots there. And
yeah.
I wouldn't take a rookie back there.
Oh, no. Heck no. And you know what? Since you got to Nevada, you've gone out with a bunch, with Neil, yourself, with me on an ATV ride, and learned how to deal with these rocks and everything, which isn't something you were accustomed to in Texas. And it takes some skill and a lot of arm strength to push those machines through that stuff. And I'm glad you did it. I felt really comfortable with the way you ride. But I'm still going to take the lead every time because I know where I'm going and you don't. And so you get to sit back there and eat that dirt. And I have no problem with it, honestly. It's kind
of
funny.
I'll tell you what, I was riding a couple of times. We got finally some smooth areas. I figured, okay, man, I can at least take my left hand off the handlebars. And boy, I hit a damn couple of rocks about the size of a football, maybe a basketball buried in the ground. And that sumbitch, this electronic power steering on this damn, you know, four-wheeler I'm driving, and that sumbitch will damn near jerk that handlebar out of your hands, mister. So about the time you think you can take it easy and enjoy the ride, you better have both hands on there. It's a come-to-Jesus meeting, man.
Man, that or the one that's hidden in the grass. You're cruising along, it just looks like a nice grassy road, and hiding in the middle of that grass clump is a nice-sized boulder.
Dude, and I met that boulder right after about a mile after we went through that gap. I was cruising along, left hand on my leg, and I hit that damn thing, and I hit it with my right tire, my right front tire. And, of course, when you do that, you know, it jerks the wheel, but also it puts pressure on the damn throttle, so you gas it.
Yeah.
At the last minute, you need to gas it. You're on the gas, you're cattywampus, and you're sideways. It's like, you stupid son of a bitch. So, anyway, it was a lot of fun riding. And on the way back, we got to finish taking care of business. We'll talk about the business here in a minute. But I said, all right, man, you guys go ahead, I'll follow you. And you said, no, man, Steve, go ahead and take the lead. It's just one way in, one way out. Go ahead. So, man, I went ahead and I rode on all those rocks. I rode on that damn side of the cliff where, you know, the high side's kind of this way, so you're tilting downhill. One wrong move and you're a goner. You're going to roll, shit, 900 yards down a hill.
Pretty much.
On your four-wheeler if you make one wrong move. Good stuff. Had a blast. And finally, I got to an area, and I figured, well, on the way up, Mitch would stop every now and then, and I was right on Mitch's ass, you know, 300 or 400 yards back. Casey was behind me. We was all staggered out to not eat all that dust. On the way back, Mitch said, man, just go ahead and take the lead. So I'm riding around. I passed by two four-wheelers that were parked there. I know they were a landmark. I kept going. Saw two dudes on two four-wheelers underneath the tree. One of them was having carburetor trouble because you stopped and talked to them. I just kept going. I didn't know what to say to them, so I kept on going. And finally, I said, man, there's only one way in and one way out. But I ain't seen nobody in a long time, so I figured I'd just sit here and wait. And while I was waiting for you guys, I was doing a photo shoot for my four-wheeler for Kawasaki for my Brute 4 750. And then finally, I said, dude, somehow, some way, you must have taken a wrong turn because y'all wasn't nowhere to be seen. And I'd been waiting there for 10 minutes. Mm. But y'all had talked to the guys with the carburetor trouble. So here y'all come. And then I kept leading the way, and I was going to take a right where we need to take that left.
Could I possibly interrupt there?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I saw you down there coming back up the hill to check on us. Because you were worried about us. Were you worried about us, or were you worried that you were lost?
No, I wasn't worried about you guys. I was worried that I had taken the wrong turn, and I was lost bigger than Dallas.
And so, like, 5 minutes after you were done worried that you'd made a wrong turn, you went ahead and made a wrong turn. You were headed north instead of south. And fortunately, you looked back and saw me wave in the right direction. And I did that so I didn't humiliate you in front of my friend that Steve might be lost.
No, that's why I look back.
Good thing.
And I will readily admit it. I done told everybody I'm turned around out here.
And if you were wearing your helmet, you wouldn't have seen me waving.
Yeah, but no, I was good with getting the directions. Here's my question. As I was sitting there doing my photo shoot with my Kawasaki Brute 4 750, the most macho four-wheeler out there, I was waiting on you guys. It's a plug for Kawasaki. Talk about your rig later. He's riding a Sportsman. Dude, if I'd have been lost and you guys went down a different road, there ain't no cell phone service out there.
Nope.
You hit a spot. We'll tell that story in a minute where you talked to my wife, your illustrious sister.
Yep.
All right, so if we hadn't hooked up and I'd been sitting out there in that damn hot-ass sun with one road to go and then a T, go right or left, if I'd have been lost, what would you tell me to do? How would we have hooked back up? We're just going to sit there and cruise all the damn roads looking for my ass, a global icon and a national treasure. I didn't have one bottle of water with me.
I would have just followed the Ranger because it had the ice chest with the sandwiches in it. That's where I would have gone. You eventually would have come back because you'd have got hungry.
No, that's why I came back. But then all of a sudden I come up on you guys. Hey, let's talk about that buggy with all the food stuff in it, because Casey was driving a rig. It's kind of like me and Kristen was playing golf over there at the golf course with my nephew Neil, and the drink girl, whatever you call her, comes by and says, hey, do y'all want some beer, this, that, or whatever? So Casey was driving a honey wagon with all the food in it, the important stuff. And my wife had boiled some eggs the first day, and then Mitch had the big idea to put the eggs, instead of putting them in a Ziploc sandwich bag with salt and pepper, to put them in a jar of pickle juice. Man, those sumbitches were good.
God darn, they're good. You know, you take that, you finish off your jar of pickles, and everybody just dumps the pickle juice down the drain. There's so many good uses for it, and I learned this a long time ago. Peel your boiled eggs, throw them in the jar of pickles. The pickle juice firms up the egg, and it kind of pickles that egg, just like pickled eggs. Put it in an ice chest, bounce it around in that water. The eggs don't get all busted up. You don't need salt and pepper. And I think we were almost ready to fight over those eggs yesterday.
Well, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the protocol. When you're sharing a jar of pickled eggs with your brother-in-law and his friend, and set of rules.
Let's talk about that protocol.
Let's go ahead and do that. Where did it go wrong?
Man, I was the first one to think about it's time to have an egg yesterday, if you remember right. So I got out of my grub box. It's in the chuck wagon, as you call it, the Ranger, with all the food and all the supplies in it. Get out a nice plastic spoon, make sure it's clean, open up that pickle jar, and reach in there with that spoon and grab an egg, and went over and handed it to my buddy Casey, who grabbed his egg and ate it, and we were raving over it. Steve, would you like one? Well, yeah, I want one. So served you one up on that plastic spoon, and you ate yours, you know, because you're out in the field, you're touching all kinds of things, you're picking things up off the ground, you're wiping the sweat off your brow, you're working the throttle on your machine, grabbing all your optics. Your hands aren't, you can't clean
Among
your hands
many other things. Things that you do when you're in the outdoors.
Amongst other things.
Yeah.
Let's not get too nasty here. And so we all have our egg. Everything's great. Next thing I know, you know, a couple hours later, we pull over to have a little lunch after our hike and everything. And I look over there and I can't believe what I see. There is no way this is humanly possible. Somebody with the size of your hands trying to get your big ass hand inside the pickle jar to get an egg. Swooshing the eggs around, get your cleaning your hands basically in the pickle juice. And I look over and I said, really, Steve, are we all supposed to have an egg now after this? And you just gave the usual Steve Austin chuckle.
I couldn't believe I was back here behind the rig and I was keeping it below the tailgate. I thought I was kayfabing. That's Russell talk for keeping it a secret. I didn't think nobody could see me back here with my hands swishing around trying to pick up a goddamn egg.
Yeah,
bitch, I couldn't get it out.
Nobody can see you out in wide open hiding behind the Ranger.
I didn't even think to take my cold steel pocket knife, Broken Skull model, and stab an egg and take it out that way. And that's the method I was using today.
That was what you did today.
Because I respected your sanitary conditions. Y'all don't want my germs. I mean, like I told Mitch, I mean, I don't want him reaching his big ass dick beaters in a damn jar of pickled eggs and handing me one. Here, Steve, have an egg.
So you used your knife today, the same one you opened packages with, clean rattlesnakes and everything else. I'll get him with this one. No, but the thing that got me the most was your solution to the problem. Just get a gallon jar of pickles. My hands will fit in there.
Did it work, didn't it?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what happened. And I got turned around a little bit on the way back. But so we was riding down today. And this is my first antelope hunt. And I'm sitting there looking at all these animals at all these extreme distances. And we made a real good stalk on a hell of a buck that we thought was a hell of a buck. Looking long range with some real strong optics. Using the terrain to stay lower than the grass. Going around these damn knolls, trying to get an approach, trying to use a rock ledge as a rest, trying not to be seen. And these son of bitches like looking at you. You're basically in their living room. When you're hunting them, that's how well they can see, and that is where they live, and that's how they operate, so the odds are against you. Anyway, nothing happened. But today, before we got to our destination point where it was really going to get good, you happened upon an animal.
Man.
And right now, it's the rut.
It is the rut.
And the rut is when, like the antelope or the mule deer or whatever it is, that's when they breed. And I guess that's when hormones run wild, testosterone overload, and these bucks are fighting for breeding rights. There's one thing on their mind, and that's survival.
Yeah.
Feathering, you know, the breed. And God dang, I'm riding behind you, and all of a sudden, you know, shit, I'm usually riding about 200-400 yards behind you, depending on the terrain, how much dust you're kicking up. And I seen you kind of throw up a gun sign. I just figured you'd seen a herd of antelope way up there. And I come up, you know, another 50, 60, 70 yards, and there's a damn antelope standing right there in front of you.
Man, you know, I don't know that anybody can say that the bucks get stupid. They just get tunnel vision. They got one thing on their mind, and that whole being wary and hauling ass and running away kind of goes out the window. They got one thing on their mind. They've been fighting a lot. There's that buck standing there looking at us as we ride up. We pull up. We shut off. All three rigs are shut off, and I'm giving you that gun sign because this is a great buck. And I couldn't believe, you know, you got your gun all lashed down. It's tied down. I'm like, man, you got to get that gun out. Hurry up, hurry up. And this is a great buck. And I'll be darned if that buck didn't keep coming closer. I don't think he knew exactly what we were, but he wanted a part of us. And after, you know, we harvested him, you could sure see all the cuts and galling that he'd been taking from fighting other bucks. He was definitely in the mood to fight.
Dude, it's unbelievable how scarred up that buck was. And as I rode up on Mitch, I see he sees the antelope. I see the antelope. You know, this is my first antelope hunt. I'd been seeing them all day the day before, seen a couple before we saw this one. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, he throws up the gun sign. And then he yells back at me. He goes, let's take the shot. Let's take the shot. But he didn't exactly say it exactly like that. So, okay, I shut my rig down. I turned the key off. Normally when I'm riding my four-wheeler, I always ride with gloves. And these are, you know, like motocross gloves or whatever. So I don't even remember it. All I know is that I lost both gloves. So I can imagine when you told me to go into action, when you're carrying out here, or at least the way Mitch told me to carry was, I put my rifle in a soft case. It's zippered up. I had a bag of gear on top of my, in the front of my four-wheeler, and I had my rifle in the case, bungee corded down like a sumbitch, because we're riding through all this crazy terrain, leaning over to the side, rocky. You don't want to bump your scope. You don't want your rig to fall off. So all of a sudden, he tells me it's time to shoot. Man, I start clawing at everything. I take my gloves off, and I'm struggling with these bungee cords. And because, dude, I can see the buck. Yeah. I'm ready. I'd been at the shooting range. I'm dialing in for a 300-yard dead-on shot and looking to shoot 400 to 500 yards if the possibility presents itself. This is probably about a 100-yard shot. This is the closest to an antelope I've ever been, because all the ones we saw were a mile and a half away, and we made a stalk up to 500 yards, and the buck wasn't what we thought, so we didn't take the shot. So we'd been riding through extreme territory. I got a badass four-wheeler with electronic power steering, and I was fighting that damn thing. All of a sudden, he tells me to get my gun. Dude, I start fighting with these bungee cords, and they ain't cooperating. I damn near pulled out my pocket knife, started cutting shit up. And the buck is still sitting there just looking at me. And he was actually approaching Mitch like he wanted a piece of Mitch. Because he's ready to fight or do whatever, or he doesn't know what we are. But it was just a crazy moment. And so Mitch is off to the left, a little bit in front of me. The buck is off to the right and in front of me. So Mitch was not in my line of sight. Finally, I get through wrestling with both of those bungee cords. Then I grab my damn case. I zipper that thing down, and the whole time I'm sitting there cussing my head off underneath my breath. I don't want to scare the buck off. He's in rut. He doesn't really care what I'm doing. I finally get my damn gun out, and lo and behold, there's an antelope down on the ground.
What a great shot. What a great finish to a great hunt. Man, one thing I got to hand it to you, sure know how to shoot your gun, and that's just a blessing for us guides out there guiding hunts, is somebody that comes prepared. Way you're prepared riding your ATV, shooting, everything was just perfect. Nice, clean harvest of an animal. Quartered them all up, bagged them all up, got them cooled down on the racks, and enjoyed a nice ride home with some memories made to last a lifetime.
I'm at a thing, anytime if I'm going to take anything, I don't want it to suffer, so I want to do my part. I want to do my due diligence as far as being up to speed with shooting. I want to make sure my gun is sighted in. I'm not going to be an irresponsible hunter, and I am a proud hunter, and I'm going to eat every single bit of that thing. But, dude, it was a damn blast, and I had a good time doing it. And now the next thing we got is same unit for mule deer. Yep. Coming up November. What do you got coming up? You still on antelope, or will you switch off? Or you got some sub guides doing bear hunts, or yep, what?
Well, yours was the fifth antelope hunt I've done this year myself, and then I have we just finished up two other antelope hunts up in the North Country. I got some great sub guides working for me doing bear hunts. Our bear season opens September 15th. We have 10 days of bear hunting right off, and then we'll go right into October where we have seven deer hunts, and then yours at the end, which we like to save the end of the season for you and have a really great time hunting. Following that up with we have two elk hunts and a late season deer hunt in November and December. And just a busy year for us, and then we'll probably go into lion hunting sometime in January.
Hey, man, Casey and you took the biggest lion probably In years?
It was quite a lion. He ended up with a lion last year that we took it up here in November. It took, gosh, I've been chasing that lion for a year and a half, and finally I figured I had him nailed down, and Casey and I hiked down in there with the dogs and caught that lion, and he got it all mounted up really nice. And I'm going to take you over and show you that before you go home, but what a great lion, 180 pounds, 185 pounds. Taxidermist that did it said it's the biggest lion he's ever mounted, and he's mounted hundreds of them. Quite a representative of the mountain lion world, that's for sure.
Dude, but you said mountain lion is one of your favorite things to eat that there is.
It is. So we want to talk about that a little bit. I had a little game feed over here a couple weeks ago, right before antelope season started up, get everybody, all my friends and their wives over here, and get them all primed up for hunting season. And, you know, it's nice that the guys' wives will come over and try everything at least. And I cooked up some mountain lion, some black bear, antelope, mule deer, and some frog legs, things like that, some treats. Mountain lion's always the biggest hit. Everybody loves it, and you know, just cook it up just like anything else, and it's just a delicious white. It's the other white meat.
Mitch, where can people find you on social media? Facebook, website, whatever. I know your book's solid.
Yep.
But you've been doing it so long, but how can people find you?
Nevada Hunting Services on Facebook, Nevada Hunting Service on Instagram, and nvhuntingservices.com on my website.
Dude, pleasure hunting with you.
Pleasure hunting with you, Steve. Thanks for everything. Thanks for letting me be part of your hunt.
From the mind of Martellus Bennett.
Once you pass 21, your birthdays are done.
It's Revenge of the Jocks on Podcast One.
Once you pass 23, you can't take me to Benihana's.
A no-holds-barred show about all the things that shape our world and culture.
I want to go to Africa. I've never been. I want to go full Jumanji. I'm Robin Williams and Jumanji.
Though, I think that's like in South America, though.
Revenge of the Jocks with Martellus Bennett.
It's like trying to have sex the first time and getting it all wrong.
I think I'll keep trying.
On Podcast One and wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, everybody, give me the go home cue. Time to wrap up his podcast, Ride Off in Sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank my brother-in-law, Mitch Bailey, for joining me on the podcast. Man, we was dead dog tired from chasing all those antelopes and being out in the damn sun. And, man, it was a great trip. Enjoyed being in the outdoors, and it was a successful trip, and I had an absolute blast. So I'm looking forward to getting back to the Broken Skull Ranch 2.0, getting some work done while I'm there already, and getting caught up on everything before we have to head back to the mean streets of Los Angeles here in a couple of weeks. But I had a good time out there hunting with my brother-in-law, and that's the bottom line. Hey, man, I got a badass beer for you. I've been talking about it on this podcast for a couple of years now. It's called Broken Skull IPA. Universally recognized as the best IPA in the United States of America. Universally recognized by yours truly, Steve Austin. You can find Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines. You live in California. If you ain't in Cali, you might be shit out of luck. I also got two badass pocket knives for you from Cold Steel. The Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife and the Working Man Knife, which can be found at my new Amazon store. Amazon got the best prices on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin to go to the Cold Steel Knives website. And I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially BetOnline.ag, DDP Yoga, TrueCar, Geico, and Super Chewer Bark Box. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. And if you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah. Of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah. That happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.